If you have your Bibles, I want to invite you to turn to Galatians chapter 6. So this is part two in our little introduction to our ministry theme for the year, which is up here in this banner, True Community. And it's connected with a study we're doing in community groups on Sunday nights on the one another's. If you've been part of those groups that have been meeting, you'll know that each of our studies are connected on these one another's that we find in the New Testament. It's one of the key phrases in the Christian's vocabulary. You might know that this phrase shows up 100 times, more than 100 times in the New Testament. In fact, 59 of those occurrences are specific commands teaching us how to and how not to relate to one another. And so that's what we've been studying and working through on Sunday nights. And we've been hitting a couple of them on Sunday mornings as well. But they might be familiar to you, like pray for one another and edify one another and prefer one another and use hospitality to one another. John 13:34 says, love one another. And John 13:35 says, love one another. And Romans 13:8 says, love one another. And 1 Peter 2:22 says, love one another. And in fact, there's a whole bunch of love one another's in the New Testament. I got a feeling that God wants us to love one another. I think so. And there's a lot of other one another's in the New Testament that are so important to impact how we treat each other, both in the church, but then just within our families, within the family of God. Last week, we looked at two of them out of Hebrews chapter 10, 24 and 25. They are consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, and exhorting or exhort one another. And we looked at what those mean. In Galatians 6, where I had you turn just a minute ago, Paul adds one more phrase, and that is to bear one another's burdens. And that's going to be sort of the central focus of this morning, bear one another's burdens. I've told you before that early on in my pastoral ministry, God kind of opened up my eyes, I don't know how else I would say that, to some specific important texts. Most of them were connected with stuff that I was working through, just trying to walk along with new believers and new Christians and young believers. But Galatians 6 is one of those sort of key texts that God just planted so firmly in my heart and in my thinking. It really transformed how I thought about things and how I thought about people and how I thought about other Christians and really shaped many of my burdens for the church. And you're going to hear some of that this morning. I hope, praying that as a result of our conversation or study through this text in Galatians 6, I hope that it shapes some of the same things for you, and we'll do some of the same for you. Let me give you a picture to think about, and then we're going to come back and read through these first few verses. If we can kind of put a mental picture in your mind as sort of a backdrop for this whole message, all right, if you can kind of put this across the back of your mind, and then what we talk about is going to then form itself against this backdrop. If you can imagine that there's a group of people that are walking along an old ancient highway, and the highway is narrow and it's long, and on both sides of this highway there's a very deep ditch, and on the ditch is it's dark and shady, you know, along the sides of this old highway. And there's a group of people that are walking along, and some are young and some are older. Some are strong and some are weaker. Some are experienced, you know, highway hikers. And others, this is kind of their first step along the path. But they're all walking along this journey together, and they're enjoying their hike, and they're enjoying their fellowship, and they're continuing on the path. But the footing is treacherous. And from time to time, you find, if you watch the group, you find that one or another of them start to slip a little bit, and maybe somebody in the group kind of helps them up and make sure that they can keep going. And along the path, along the outside of these ditches, there's like these, if you can kind of picture this, there's sort of these shady spots. And in these spots, kind of here and there, there's some people that are on the outside, and sometimes even some big groups. And it looks like they're having a great time. And they're calling out, sort of beckoning to the little group that are on the path, that are on that highway. And they're saying, come on over. We're having a great time. Come on and join us. And from time to time, along that group, somebody does. They might trip a little bit and slip on some wet spots, and they might slide down into the ditch. Or they might intentionally sort of see somebody that they've known for a while, maybe a friend that's calling them over, and they, for that space of time, they say, man, I don't know if I want to stay on this ditch. I'm going to stop for a while, and I'm going to, you know, hang out. And on this journey, if you can kind of track along, over time, from the group, there are some that fall away. They fall off into the ditch. And when they fall off, or even if they leave the path intentionally, at some point they realize that what they thought was out there isn't really what they got. And who they thought they were going to go see really didn't care as much about them as they thought they would. And eventually you can kind of see along this path some people in the ditch, and they're hurt. And they're wounded. This is, I think, the picture of what Paul is trying to describe for us when he says in Galatians 6 and verse 1, he says, if a man is overtaken in a fault. And the question that I want to ask this morning, I want us to talk through from this text is, how do we respond to this situation? So let's start by reading in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1. Here's what it says. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear you one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. We're going to approach this text very similarly to how we looked at Hebrews 10 last week. I want to give you two big ideas, and we're going to hang everything on those two big ideas, and then we're going to talk about four main takeaways. And the teaching that we're going to do is just going to go right down this text, so you'll be able to follow right along. There's a couple of key words I'm going to try to get your focus on, and some phrases, and I'd like us all together to see how this whole thing fits together through some very important teaching. All right, here's the two big ideas. I think verse 1 talks about God's search and rescue team. And then verses 2 through 5 talk about God's burden-bearing plan. All right, so God's search and rescue team, and then God's burden-bearing plan. So let's talk first about this first one, verse 1. We know a lot about search and rescue here on Guam. It's not unusual in the course of a week, or certainly during the course of a month, to have situations where, maybe some swimmers get pulled out and search and rescue goes to try to rescue them, or some boaters get lost, or an engine fails out along the way. So it's not unusual for us to have, you know, some issues, some problems out in the ocean around us. And in fact, it's not unusual to have on land issues. Somebody's out hiking in the jungle, and they get lost, or they might get hurt. And so a search and rescue team is a group of men and women, and actually sometimes animals, depending on what they're doing, that are highly trained and willing to go into dangerous situations in order they could find somebody that's been lost, or they could help somebody that's been wounded or been trapped somewhere. Here in our family, our church family, we've got some that are part of the Coast Guard and some that have been in the Coast Guard in the past. We have those that are involved in the fire department. Search and rescue is part of those, you know, those types of organizations. I think that's exactly what verse 1 is talking about. So here's takeaway number 1. Along the Christian journey, some are going to fall. Some are going to get sidetracked. They're going to mess up. They're going to crash. The word, if you can look at the verse with me, the word that is used in verse 1 is overtaken. And overtaken is a really important word. It has the idea of someone who is taken by surprise. They've been overtaken by sin. And before they know it, they get all tangled up and they can't escape. So this is often how sin works. Most believers don't intend to get sidetracked by sin. That doesn't mean that we can make excuses for our sin. I mean, just because we didn't intend to sin doesn't mean that God does not hold us personally responsible for our sin. All right, but we can get overtaken by it. I mean, that's the word. It's like I just wasn't paying attention. I wasn't looking out for the path, and all of a sudden, I was taken by surprise. What it means is this: believers, others, ought to have a great deal of compassion for those who have fallen into sin. Because we realize that not everybody who falls along the way, not everybody does so with an attitude of willful rebellion. And here's the thing that I told you to last week. It's likely that this is going to happen to many of us in this room. Somewhere along the road, different situations, different weaknesses, different circumstances. Listen, no one is immune to this. And we'll say this later when we get to the end of verse 1. Where it says, consider yourself lest you also be tempted. Nobody is immune to this. And then verse 3, if a man thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. So here's the situation. There's a believer who has been overtaken and has fallen. In fact, that second word in the verse, the word is fault or sin. And that's what it means, exactly that. In fact, that's why sometimes some translators translate it fault, and in some of your translations it might be sin. This is the word. It means that they've fallen beside. It has this idea of falling along the way, just like the scenario we just described. So what are we supposed to do about it? What is supposed to be done when we find out, when we realize that somebody that had been walking along the path with us, a brother or a sister, has been sidetracked by sin? What are we supposed to do when we're walking along and they're starting to stumble and we're starting to realize that, hey, there's some struggles that are coming along the way? What are we supposed to do to someone that's on the verge of maybe falling away, falling into that ditch? Do we ignore it? We avoid it? Like, hey, listen, that's none of my business. Just act like it never happened. Just kind of keep journeying along the path. Decide that, hey, listen, that's just between them and God. I mean, I'm not going to step into something that's not my deal. Hey, listen, no, we can't do that. We actually find this teaching in many places in the New Testament, but you can go and study through 1 Corinthians 5. I mean, that does happen in churches, and it happened in the New Testament church there at Corinth. I mean, some people had been taken in sin, and the church had just ignored it, and they were kind of proud of it. And Paul says to the Corinthians, man, you ought to be embarrassed about that. You ought to be ashamed. No, we can't just let somebody fall head off into the ditch and the disaster and the destruction of sin and just act like, hey, I don't want to get my hands dirty, or I don't want to bug them. I don't really feel like I should step into that. Hey, Paul writes, you who are spiritual, restore such a one. So here's takeaway number 2. Falling doesn't mean it's the end of your journey. And this is going to be real important to somebody in here. In fact, I think it might be really important to a few somebodies. Falling does not have to mean the end of your spiritual journey. It does not have to mean that you have to somehow kind of live in shame for the rest of your life, because you're never going to forget that thing that happened, that thing that you did. That you can never be used of God again, or you're never going to be able to find joy in God. Listen, this is not at all what the Bible teaches. It's not true. And if you have believed that, maybe for a long time, listen, God's word is here this morning to set you free. So hang in here with this. I want you to hear what God says, because here's takeaway number three. In a healthy church, true Christians always actively seek restoration for those who have fallen. This concept of spiritual restoration is so important, it's so significant to us. Let's say that you're driving down the road, you know, here on island. Let's say you're on the Cross Island Road, and you're driving along, and you got some other things going on, and you just lose attention for a minute, and you start to drift a little bit off the road. And as you start to drift off the road, you hit one of those, you know, big old potholes, big old hole, and you hit it hard. And when you hit it, I mean, you immediately your alignment's all messed up, and it flattens your tire, and it sends your car skidding off the road into the ditch, and you smash into a pole, and you know, your hood pops up, and there you are just sitting there dazed, like, what in the world just happened? You're not hurt, kind of shaken a little bit, and you get out of your car, and then you think, well, what am I going to do with this car? I mean, this thing's a mess. It's, you know, it's got radiator fluid dripping out, and I mean, this thing's not going to start for sure. It's not going to run. What am I going to do with this car? I mean, do I just leave it here? Just kind of let it rust and let the vandals come and take, you know, whatever parts. I mean, I guess that's mostly what we do here in Guam. We just kind of leave it. No. No, you're not going to leave your car there in the ditch. You're going to call somebody, and they're going to come, and they're going to help you, and you're going to, you know, you're going to tow the car somewhere, probably to a repair shop. You're going to tow it somewhere with somebody who knows what they're doing. By the way, this is really important. They know what they're doing. They're an experienced mechanic, and you're going to bring the car in, and they're going to, you know, beat out the dents, and they're going to fix the alignment, and the mechanic's going to look under the hood, and we're going to repair the hoses that had busted out, and you're going to fix the tire so that the car is restored. Right? So it can operate again. Well, that's exactly what this restoration word is talking about. Paul writes, you who are spiritual, restore such a one. How often, I think, in the church, we leave fallen Christians in the ditch, full of shame for maybe what they've done, or remorse for the choices that they've made, without anybody ever caring enough to seek to restore them. Certainly not all want to be restored. Some might be so trapped by sin that they're unwilling to repent and turn again to Christ. But listen, let's never be guilty of abandoning a believer in the ditch of sin when all he or she needs is somebody to come along and just give him a little help to help him get out. I was thinking about some of our church family, young adults. Some had attended Harvest over the years, you know, for some time, kind of grown up in families and were children's ministries and part of Heart for Christ, part of teen ministry. And then for whatever reason, it's all different reasons, but along the way, some have you know, gone into the ditch. I was thinking about some HBBC students that they were on the path. I mean, they'd been here at the college, and they were pursuing God. They were with a group that was on the journey, on the spiritual journey together. But along the way, something had happened, and they had fallen along the way. And I'm thinking, who is going to go and help them? I can think of people and names. And do you just leave them in the ditch? Do you just say, hey, they made their choices, or they'll have to? Who is going to go and help them? A little earlier, I called this restoration process God's search and rescue team. I wasn't really saying it just to be cute about it. I really do think it's a good description of it. In fact, if I can just give you a couple notes about it right from this verse. Verse 1 tells us that team's their qualifications. And it, what it says is they're to be spiritual believers. What that means is that not all may be qualified. Because this restoration process is a sensitive process. So Christians who are spiritually mature are the ones who should be dealing with these sensitive issues. People who are walking by the control of the Holy Spirit. Now you might be saying, wow, happy about that. That kind of lets me off the hook. Because I'm not qualified. And I just say to you, if that's how you think, man, that's too bad. You may not be qualified, but you should be. If you're kind of thinking, hey, we just got to leave that to, like, that's for the pastors, or that's for, you know, a few of our deacons, that's just for some other people. And I'm saying, no, it can't be that way. Because there's going to be somebody who needs you. They don't have a connection with somebody else. They might not be in the view of somebody else who knows what's going on. You're the one who knows. You're the one who sees. You're the one who's walking along close enough beside them to know that they're struggling and they're either on their way to falling or they've already fallen and tripped into that ditch. You're the one who knows. You're the one that should be able to help. There's going to be somebody who needs you. And there are believers in the ditches all around us. And no one is there to gently and to lovingly confront them and help them to see the devastation that sin is having in their lives. So we have qualifications. The text talks about our operational guidelines. Paul tells us two guidelines for those who go to rescue, aid a wounded Christian. First, restoration ought to be done in a spirit of meekness, and it's important. Some of the other translations use the word gentleness. I like meekness, which we have said before doesn't have anything to do with weakness. It doesn't have anything to do with hesitation or compromise. In fact, it's used to describe the term of, it's to speak of taming wild animals. I mean, meekness is this power under control. And this restoration process has to be done with meekness. The meek person that God uses to help restore a wounded believer is going to be need to be firm and uncompromising. I mean, we can't deny the awfulness of sin. We can't deny its consequences. It's going to have to be able to walk in to help somebody with the truth of the Scripture that says, man, if you keep going along this path, this is going to be devastation for you. This is what God's Word says. But listen, that kind of strength has to be encompassed with humble, gentle, Christ-like care and concern. Because that's the only way that genuine restoration can ever take place. So it has to be done in a spirit of meekness. And Paul says it has to be done in a spirit of humility. He says, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. And I don't think this is so much a warning about sort of this idea like, you go and challenge somebody else about something, and then in the midst of challenging them, you end up falling into the same sin yourself. That's certainly true, and there's some other texts that talk about that, but I don't think that's the point of this verse. The real significance is that this attitude affects how we view those who have fallen. Right? Restoration can never be accomplished with someone who has kind of a, you know, hey, you messed up, but you know I'm sort of holier than you. Kind of looking down on somebody else. Listen, that's not how it is. That's not going to help at all. This kind of restoration is someone that comes in a spirit of humility, considering ourselves, lest we also be tempted. I'm just a brother like you, and I have my tendency to fall just like you, but I can come along as a brother and sister. I like to help you. And their mission, it's very clear, it's to seek restoration. I don't often do this, but the word's important for us. So the original word is the word katartizo. That's the word restoration that we see here in this verse, katartizo. And the reason I'm telling you that is because it's used in some other places in the New Testament to help us. In Matthew chapter 4, 21, it's used in reference to James and John mending or restoring their fishing nets that were torn and they were tangled. That's the word, katartizo. They mended them. It's also used, and I really like this, to describe the medical procedure of setting a broken bone. Hey, listen, if you broke a bone, I don't know how many in here have had that wonderful experience sometime along, but if you break a bone, an arm or a leg, you don't want just anybody trying to fix it. I mean, in this case, you don't go down to your local mechanic, you know? That guy's pretty good if the car is wrecked. Go to him. He knows what he's doing. But if you got a broken arm, you don't go down to the mechanic and say, hey, man, you did really good with my car. You got some tools to fix this thing. No, you want somebody who knows what they're doing. You want a doctor who has great skill and is going to use extreme care and compassion in helping. You got to get it fixed. The bone has to be restored. But this is the restoration that's talked about, like the setting a broken bone, making it just like new. When my oldest son Matt was playing basketball, we were traveling basketball. I think he was 6th or 7th grade, and we were at a traveling tournament away from our town a little bit. And he, in one of the games, he fell and he broke his arm. And I think I've told you this before. He was playing, and I've always told my kids, listen, if you're playing, if you stay down, I want to know that you're hurt, all right? So don't be faking it out there, get me all worried, and mom have a heart attack. So you know, he stayed down. In fact, you could tell, you know, his arm was bending in a funny direction. And so we knew it, and of course, we got Matt carefully, and he's in a lot of pain, and we got him in the car and brought him back, you know, to our city, and brought to the emergency room, and we went in and saw the doctor, and they took x-rays. They didn't really have to take them because you could see the arm was like at a funny angle. I think it's broken. But anyhow, they took the x-rays, and then I'll never forget this. We've got Matt now, and, you know, with the doctor, the x-rays are all proven what everybody knows, and I don't remember if they gave him pain meds or not. I'd tell the truth. I don't remember. All I know is that doctor looked Matt in the eye and he said, hey, listen, buddy, this is going to hurt. And then he took that arm. Any parents experience this? Because it's way harder on the parents, than I'm just telling you, than the kids. And he took that arm and, you know, he just kind of kept Matt's gaze and he twisted and he turned and he pulled real quick, firmly. Gently, yeah, compassionately, I'm thankful for, but very firmly. And Matt did fine, and I just about passed out. But, I mean, if you got a broken arm, and, you know, if your son is struggling, you don't want to go to the doctor, and he's like, oh, man, you look like you're in a lot of pain. And I really don't want to hurt you anymore. And so, you know, we're just going to let you go home and see if this works its way out. No. No, the doctor knows that if this bone doesn't get reset, there's going to be long-term impact and effect on the brokenness. And so we need to come along and set it so that it's back in operational order. It's been restored. But listen, we definitely want that to be done with gentleness and meekness. That's what this is talking about. For restoration to take place, things have to be made right. It can't just be compassion and care without setting things right, but you want to make sure that those adjustments are done with care and gentleness. Okay, here's the second big idea. It's God's burden-bearing plan. That's really verses 2 through 5. And takeaway number 4 is this, and this is so important. We're kind of coming to the stretch run here. If you can kind of take a breath and then listen closely. Never forget that the weight of failure can be a crushing burden for those who carry it. And this is what verse 2 tells us. It says, bear one another's burdens. Listen, somebody who has fallen, they've got lots of burdens that they're carrying. They're carrying shame and grief, and they might be fighting some depression and remorse that's resulted from, you know, kind of the exposure of what had happened and of their sin, and they're carrying these weights. And maybe they're dealing with some very difficult circumstances that often accompany some of these sin setbacks. And listen, there are consequences for sin. And sometimes we, you know, when we take the step and we fall off, not only do we have the shame and the remorse, but there's stuff that comes with it and we're carrying that and it's heavy. You say, well, it's their own fault. And Paul says, bear one another's burdens. You say, well, they never should have done it in the first place. They knew better. And Paul says, no, listen, bear one another's burdens. Or you say, man, they have fallen too many times. I've been there before, but it's just another time again. And Paul says, bear you one another's burdens. If I can just give you this picture this morning of somebody who's just completely overwhelmed with the burden that their actions and their sin has had. And they've fallen down in that ditch. And if you can just picture this overwhelming heaviness that's on them, and they can't get up. They're trying to get up. And they've tried to get up before. And they feel this overwhelming weight. And what it would be if somebody would step down into the ditch with them. Not look down on them, but get down with them. And it's going to be messy. And it's going to be hard. But what would happen if someone came along, instead of saying, man, they shouldn't have done it, they come along and say, can I help you? Can I help bear some of these burdens, some of the consequences that are a result of this? Can I help you? Can I be a part of the solution? Can I help you see restoration? Man, I've watched this happen too many times, where failures can be crushing. And that person who's experienced it is just left alone, just to try to deal with it on their own. If someone had been there, and I'm so glad to tell you this morning that I've watched also this happen many, many times, where someone comes along and gets down in that ditch with them, and it's messy and it's dark, and they start to take some of that burden for them. Hey, can I carry some of this with you? Listen, this is Galatians 6, 1 and 2. This is biblical church discipline, biblical church correction, and it should be happening all the time in a healthy church. Let me tell you, there's a lot of people here. There's a lot of people here in this room. We had an earlier service. It was filled with a lot of people. In our Harvest family, there's a lot of people. You know what that means? It means a lot of failure, a lot of falling. Is that because we got a lot of problems? No, it's not that. No, listen, life can be hard and it can be confusing. And there is a war out there And people are in that war for their lives and for their souls. And we wrestle not against flesh and blood. And in this battle, in this journey, there are going to be falls. There's going to be wounds. You know, as a shepherd, as a pastor, our pastors, I think the same. You're kind of trained and you're wired to go out and find the sheep. And man, I feel this. I mean, this is how I'm wired. This is in me. But you know, sometimes there's a lot of sheep that have been wounded. And the job of the church is not just to have only a few people that are specially trained to do this. And hey, listen, that's the pastor's job to go do that. Or that's the deacon's job to do that. Listen, we got to have everybody that'll be part of this burden-bearing team. And that means you. We're not talking about a church where, you know, you got kind of one little search and rescue team and that's their job and they go out and do that. For sure, there's going to be some that are specifically gifted and maybe more trained for some of that. But it's got to be the whole group of us caring for each other. And that means that you got to know people. Because how are you going to know if they're falling off the path if you're not on the path journeying with them? If you're just journeying by yourself, how are you going to know anybody else is struggling? And how are they going to know if you're struggling? And we're going to have to be aware. And we're going to have to be watching for them. And we're going to have to care enough to do something, to get down into the mess and to walk alongside them in helping up to lift up some of the mess that they've been overwhelmed by. Brothers, if a man is overtaken in a fault, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. I was thinking this week about, I mentioned earlier about young people that have grown up in this church, young adults now. I was thinking about HBBC alumni. I was thinking about our teens. You know, our teens right now are in such an amazingly sort of susceptible season of life and time of life. They're still figuring things out spiritually. They're gaining the strength and the experience that they need in walking the spiritual journey. I'm so thankful that God has given, you know, us a shepherd, Pastor Josh and Amy, that are, you know, just burning and wired for this. I'm thankful for Miss Rhonda and others. And listen, I want to say to our church, I want to say to our youth sponsors, we got an awesome group of youth sponsors. Man, this is so critical. This is our job. The job with teens is not to kind of be crowd control on Wednesday nights. Man, we got to be responsible because they're going to slip up. And they're going to fall. And who's going to be there for them in order to help them up and help them with the burdens that come along with some of the choices that they made? Man, this is what we have to do as a church. Let's see if we can put all this together. I asked Pastor Jake for a group picture of one of the Young Pro hikes, and I think we have that here. This is an awesome picture, minus the Chicago Bulls hat, Jake. That's the part we get rid of that. We got our Young Pros, kind of, this is their section over here, a little shout out to the Young Pros. We've got an awesome, I'm so thankful for what God's doing in our Young Pros group, young professionals. I've said this before about our C2C, our Children to Christ. We've got an awesome children's ministry, and I've said it this way, that, man, if you live on Guam and you've got kids, you know, that are elementary and below, you'd have to be crazy not to have your kids involved in C2C and Harvest Children's Ministries. It's so incredible what's happening there. Kids love it, and they're growing. I mean, it's just an awesome, awesome place for them to know about Jesus. I say the same thing about Young Pros. Man, if you're single and you live on Guam, and you're kind of college age or out of college age, you got to be crazy not to be a part of Young Pros, because it's so awesome what is happening in this group. I mean, we're talking about true community. That's happening in our Young Pros group. They're walking along this path, this journey together, and some are stronger and some are weaker. I mean, that's the picture, right? Young Pros do these hikes. I don't know, Jay, a couple times a month, I think. Not every weekend, but they do these hikes. And I think this picture, Jake told me, was of a SETI Bay hike. I don't know how long ago. And he said this was a hard one. It was long, and there were some injuries along the way. In fact, I said in the first service that somebody lost a toenail. I was corrected. They lost two toenails. Some injuries along the way, and the trail was hard, and they got a little bit lost. You know, they got their way back. You know, they made it back, but you know, this is the picture. They're having an awesome time. You can see it, right? And that's what this is on this journey. When we're together in true community and we're walking together, it is an awesome time. And in that group, some are experienced hikers and some are less experienced. Some are stronger and some are weaker. But as we travel along this path, we kind of help each other, because sometimes the path gets hard, and so we reach back and we help. And sometimes we got to use the ropes, and sometimes people get injured and we stop and we help. And we don't leave anybody behind. Right, Jake? We haven't left anybody behind yet. Not yet. We don't leave them behind. If somebody gets if they're hurt, man, we're going to stay with them and we're going to help them to get back up on the path so that we can get to the destination. That's true community. Hey, listen, in our church, this is a big group. There's a lot of people. We got to look out for each other. You got to be in places where you know others so that we can care for each other. The church was not meant to be, it was never intended to be some like meeting place where people came and they met and they listened and they left and that was the end of it. That's not how God describes the church. It is true community. And this is what is to be happening in the community. Man, our community groups that are meeting Sunday nights, man, we got to look out for each other. Our Bible studies are meeting all throughout the week. Men's studies and ladies' studies and couple studies and individual. I mean, we got to be looking out for each other. Because some are stronger and some are weaker. And the road is difficult, so we got to help each other. And along the way, some of us are going to get sidetracked. We're going to fall into the ditch. And sin is going to grab hold of our lives. When that happens, it really messes things up. And that burden is overwhelming. But when that happens, somebody in this church sees their brother and their sister, and they stop and they go back. And they don't ignore them, just go on their way. They don't condemn them and act all self-righteous. No, they go back. And with great meekness and humility and gentle compassion, they stoop down. In fact, they get down in the ditch and they pick up their friend and they help carry some of the burden. They don't excuse their sin. They don't look past it. They make sure that they help to mend and restore the bone. They deal with it with godly biblical counsel. But they gently, compassionately, and firmly seek restoration. What an amazing picture. What an amazing picture of true community.